Ugh, I'm not in the mood. Do we have to do this?
Yes.
Wait, are we recording? Okay, let's go. You're listening to The Allie Colbert Show.
Allie Colbert Show. I'm your host, Allie Colbert. Thanks for joining us. Decided to do an intro this week. It's like I want to do them, but sometimes they're so annoying. But I don't know, guys. I'm mixed. You ever just not want to get out of bed and sleep all day? Who else is depressed? Fitting topic. We have a sad, breakups can be sad or they can be really like the cornerstone of amazing growth. And we have Amy Chen on the podcast to talk all about her really innovative breakup boot camp, the scientific and spiritual ways to move through, get over a breakup. And it's a great chat. Amy's really knowledgeable. People are asking if I've been watching The Ultimatum Queer Love, which kind of this show tests whether or not it's interesting to watch emotional processing on television. I personally deal with enough lesbians emotionally processing daily in my personal life. I'm not sure I need to watch it on Netflix. I'm a little behind the curve, but eventually I'll get there when I have enough time being awake. I'll watch it. I've heard good things. I want to support the lesbian community. Guys, just so you know, the show is now on YouTube, so I have the full-length videos on YouTube, which are really fun. People are enjoying them. Feel free to check it out. And also, buy tickets to my shows. Come see me live. I'm going to be in New York next week. I'm going to be headlining in LA, Dynasty Typewriter, June 21st. I'm going to be at the Irvine Improv at the end of the month, and then next month, Seattle, San Francisco, Sacramento. So come get tickets and say hi. You can get those at AllieColbert.com. I have my whole show schedule up there. Is anyone else watching Dave? How fucking good is Dave? No spoilers here, but the finale has Brad Pitt in it. Like, that's amazing. And Rachel McAdams and Drake. What? That's the best show on television, hands down. I feel like I want to, like, now be the female Lil Dicky. I could be called like Lil Clit, and I could rap like Lil Dicky. I love how he raps. It's like he's like a rapping Larry David. His personality is so amazing. It's like it makes him hot to me, and I'm gay. So that's a big deal. Subscribe to the pod. Leave a comment. Give us 5 stars. Watch on YouTube. Do all the things. Share it on your stories. And by the way, email the show if you want. TheAllieColbertShow@gmail.com. I love your emails. I love your questions. You can call us too. All that stuff is in the Instagram bio because I forget the phone number right now off the top of my head, which I totally should remember. You know what? I'll just look it up for you guys because this actually is the pod. 833-722-5546. Enjoy the episode. Okay, so Amy Chen, Breakup Boot Camp. I mean, a lot of my friends have read your book. I just ordered your book, so we'll have to talk before I've read it. But I see you all over the internet, and I think navigating breakups is something that people are probably under-resourced and under-supported to do. So I guess if you want to tell us a little bit about yourself first.
Yeah. So I'm the founder of Breakup Bootcamp. We take a scientific and spiritual approach to healing the heart. And it's a 4-day retreat out in nature. We bring in a team of 12 experts. You're in intense programming from 9 a.m. until 9 p.m. And we really look at old patterns that were there way beyond your ex. And we help people rewire that so that they don't repeat the same emotional experiences and can create healthy relationships in the future. Yeah. And then I wrote the book, Breakup Bootcamp, The Science of Rewiring Your Heart. I just deal with heartbreak all day, every day. And
I'm so sorry.
I love it. I see breakups as the beginning. I don't see it as the ending, which when people are in it, they're like, this pain's never going to end. But I'm so excited for their future because sometimes a breakup is a shakeup. You need to redirect your life.
And do you call it a retreat? What, you call it a boot camp?
Yeah, it's a boot camp.
it's somatic work then, if you're like it's not therapy.
Yeah, so we take a holistic approach and we bring in psychologists, sex therapists, somatic experts, and you're approaching the heartbreak and healing the heart, mind, body, soul. Because a lot of the times I'm getting people who are very in their head and they can't talk themselves out of this pain or the loops that they're in. So we have sessions where they're moving emotion through the body. They are releasing trauma. We even bring in a dominatrix who specializes in the psychology of power dynamics, because another theme of the people who come is they might be very powerful in their careers, but when it comes to matters of the heart, they feel very disempowered.
Wow. So, and where is this located, the boot camp?
They're in upstate New York or in Sonoma, California.
Wow. And are you at each of them, or are you staffed them?
I'm at each of them. I am in every session because I'm still learning every single time.
Wow. Did you go through a huge, how did you get to this type of work? Did you go through a terrible, unimaginable breakup? What happened?
Yes. So about 10 years ago, I was dating someone and I thought, you know, I was living the dream. My happily forever after was set out for me. We were going to get married. We were going to have kids. He owned a business. So I would eventually, you know, not have to work and just, you know, work on the side for fun.
Right.
And that relationship fell apart due to infidelity. And when it fell apart, I fell apart, because my entire identity and future life plan was based on this relationship. And it also ripped off the Band-Aid of all the wounds I never dealt with, starting from childhood. And so it was very, very hard on me. I went to a really dark place, like suicidal thoughts. It was just really bad. And when I came out of that, which took a very long time, took a lot of different types of therapy, yoga retreats, all these things, I just asked myself, I'm like, what happens to those people who don't have friends who are going to lend them their couch, who don't know what books to read? Like, what happens to them? Because I was just a few bad decisions away from doing something completely destructive. And I decided that I had to create what didn't exist for me. And that's how Breakup Bootcamp was born.
Wow. And so what is the thesis around Breakup Bootcamp? Because I know you're not going to go there and feel completely over it when you leave. Like, what is the aim? You know?
Yeah, the aim is to teach people the tools on how to deal with emotional regulation, how to get out of fight or flight, how to recognize what patterns keep popping up, what subconscious beliefs are running the show, and then helping them through a process to start shifting those beliefs and creating a strategy so that when they come out of the boot camp and they're back into the real world, they have some homework to do. They might have to set a boundary. They might need to practice using nonviolent communication. They might need to shake it out the next time they're feeling anxiety. And it's also a period of time where they're also connecting with other people who are going through something very similar. While the stories might be very different, you get to experience people who are all grieving the same heartbreak. And you recognize we're all pretty similar and we're all kind of connected here in this shared experience.
So how many people are there, did you say, that are like fellow heartbreakers?
25 participants and 12 people are on the team.
25 participants. Okay, something I could imagine myself saying to convince myself not to go would be that my breakup wasn't big enough or bad enough for me to qualify for this like boot camp. So what would you say to that?
Yeah, and I hear this a lot where we look at, say, even trauma, right? There's what's called big T trauma, which is a big event. Maybe it was abuse. Maybe it was a car accident. And then someone who has little T trauma, maybe that was insults every day for 5 years while you're a child. Usually the person with little T trauma is like, well, my trauma wasn't big enough, so therefore I don't deserve to feel this pain or get the help. And I would say the same thing. How we're impacted by the event is what we want to look at, not the event itself, right? So some people can experience a traumatic event or a breakup and not really get stuck in it. And some people, it could be they were dating someone for 3 months and that hit them harder than the divorce of 30 years. And so one person's pain is, it's not a competition, I guess I'd say that.
Right. You know, I just had this thought that I don't know if this is a rule at Breakup Bootcamp, but if it's not, I think it should be one, that the participants can't start dating each other.
I do tell them not to trauma bond, but will admit there are people who have connected afterwards.
Because I could totally see when your walls come down and you're surrounded with other people that are lonely, and that I'm immediately like, well, we should probably fuck each other at Breakup Bootcamp. You know what right. I mean? Like, that should be probably something easy to go into. When I've done somatic work in the past, and I did work through Atlas, which is a part of the LifeSpring movement, and I've talked about it on my podcast before, but you'll often see people... I'm just going on a tangent of my own, but like basically distracting themselves from processing their work by just trauma bonding with each other when you're like surrounded with other vulnerable people that are sort of like interrupting negative patterns. It's really easy to be like, oh, I'm just going to project everything onto this available person.
Yeah.
What do you say to like the idea that getting under someone is the best way to get over someone? Is that not the case then?
It's definitely not, because when we are doing something to distract or avoid feeling and processing, we're only procrastinating our pain. It doesn't just magically go away. Your patterns don't disappear because you're dating someone new. Your patterns stay with you. And typically after the honeymoon period, and I mean this influx of chemicals that are happening in the first 3 to 8 months, once that starts to go down, those patterns come back with a vengeance. So I highly recommend to people to not avoid or distract themselves, whatever that vice is, whether it's sex, whether it's dating apps, whether it's drinking, and really deal with what you are feeling and processing that. But I also don't believe that you have to be healed in order to start dating again, because there's no such thing. I wish that it could be like, okay, you break up and then you heal from that, and there's this tiny little package with a bow, and then you can go on to the next. It's not like that. In reality, it's a lot more messy. You can miss your ex and feel sadness sometimes when you think about that person and still be excited about another person. And I think it's very individual. You need to ask yourself, am I distracting? Am I avoiding? Or is the emotional charge neutral enough that I could be open to another person?
Right. I would, I've had that happen in the past where I'm still dealing with a heartbreak and I end up like feeling into someone new at the same, like I can hold those things at the same time.
Yeah.
But I do wonder if it's like, it's like a question of like, how do I know when I've moved on enough? Like, how do I know if these feelings, like when do you let go of feeling? Like there's so many question marks around it.
Yeah, and I don't think that the feelings are an indicator that you haven't let go. You can feel sad about someone or a relationship not working out according to plan. It doesn't necessarily mean that you're stuck in it. And I think a good question to ask yourself is, what is the emotional charge? If you are still vilifying your ex, blaming your ex, analyzing your ex, the person's name brings up rage, that's emotional charge. You're still in a relationship with your ex. You're just in a relationship with someone who's not in a relationship with you. But if you can talk about your ex without it being bringing over this overwhelming emotion that kind of takes over, it might be a time that you are okay to start opening up. And the only way to tell is to try. If you go on another date and you're destroyed because it didn't work out the way you wanted, that's a signal that you might need to just heal a bit more.
Yeah. What are, you must see this all. Do you have a rule about stalking your ex on social media, or what is your thought there? For
100%, do not stalk your ex. And there's a scientific reason why. So when you're in a relationship with someone, you have neural pathways that wire together. Every time you make out, every time you have coffee together, it's just strengthening those pathways. After a breakup, your brain, you're like, oh, okay, I know cognitively this is over, but your body hasn't gotten the memo yet. Your body's in a state of shock. So if you continue to look at old text messages, stalk your ex, check out their IG stories with your Finsta, you are only strengthening those old neural pathways. You're not allowing them to prune away. So this causes you to stay stuck in that grief and that attachment for a lot longer.
Right. You're like in resistance to reality. You just keep going back to, it's so funny, we're like mice.
Yeah.
What are some things, and this might come off like a cynical question, but I don't mean it that way, but when you get into a new relationship, and, you know, of course, everyone hopes I mean, look, most people are going into a relationship thinking maybe this will be the one, right? Mm-hmm. But of course we go through breakups as humans. What are things we could do throughout the course of a relationship or going into a relationship that could keep us safer were the relationship to end? Like, what are the choices we make to not leave us so upended in the event of a breakup?
Yeah. So there is definitely a difference between people who go through a breakup, who have a strong identity. They haven't lost themselves in the relationship. They still have their friends that are separate from their partner. They still have their own hobbies and interests. Their entire life and sense of self-worth isn't dependent on the validation from their partner. When these people go through a breakup, there is a period of time of mourning the grief and loss, and they eventually get back up and they continue moving on. Then there are the ones that tend to be more codependent, maybe more anxiously attached. Their entire world is around their partner. They might have stopped investing in their friendships because they just want to be around their partner all the time. And these are the people that get hit the hardest because their entire world and identity is based on this relationship. So when you go through a breakup, you're not just grieving the relationship, you're grieving yourself. And so I think some ways to prevent that is to constantly check in with yourself that you're not losing yourself in the relationship, that you carve out time to do your own thing, that you continue to invest in friendships, hobbies, community.
Yeah, it's very difficult. Relationships are really tough. And the breakups I've gone through in my life they've marked the worst periods of my life, breakups.
Yeah. You know? And have you found that the breakup helped in any way?
Helped my life?
Yeah. Or anything, I mean, like another relationship?
Yeah, of course. I mean, they're the most painful periods, and then they've always ushered in something that's been better. That's true.
Right. That's amazing.
I just never frame it that way in my mind. Yeah. That's so funny. Me recalling it, I'm telling you they're the worst, and you're like, but did they bring upon something better? And always, I've never gone through a breakup and then said, and my life's been way worse on the other side, and I've lived in regret, and my life is in the afterglow of this relationship. I usually feel that another thing I've done in the past in relationships that I see some of my friends doing is people generally have a sense that a breakup needs to happen. Mm. Often, unless, you know, you're one of these people that pulls the trigger fast, long before the breakup happens.
Yeah.
You know, you'll hear people say things like, I'm more into the relationship while I was in it, or it's been a long time coming. Mm. What are kind of your thoughts on dragging things out, how to kind of not do that, and maybe why we do? So there's a lot of questions there, but like just the staying in the relationship past its expiration date.
Yeah. One of the big reasons is because of something called sunk cost fallacy. And it's a term that's used a lot in economics and in stock markets, where we put good money into a bad deal, right? Hoping that eventually it's going to pay out. And we do this even when we watch a movie. We buy tickets to a movie, the first 30 minutes suck, but we watch the whole thing because we already spent the $20. And we do this in relationships. We stay because we already invested years, the therapy, we bought a house together, whatever it is. So we keep focusing on the past investment, hoping that it's going to pay out. We're holding on for future potential versus looking at the reality of the situation and focusing on present and future value. And I think that's a question you want to ask yourself if you're in the situation where there's something in you that's nagging, like, this isn't right, this isn't right. And you keep overriding it with your brain, rationalizing why you should stay. Ask yourself, if you were to make the same decision right now, you can't recoup your past investment because you can't, would you choose this person today?
Yeah, you're right. I guess that would be, well, you're saying in the relationship while you're in it, saying, would I choose them right now?
Yeah.
Knowing what's going on. Is that what you're suggesting?
Yeah. Versus holding up for future hope. And I think another trap that traps us is intermittent reinforcement. So when there's like these small little changes, maybe they started reading that book you've always wanted them to read. Mm-hmm. Or they have a tendency to rage when they get into conflict. And finally, they start seeing therapy. And you notice that these blips of changes, or a really bad time. And then you go on a romantic vacation. It's amazing. You come back. But then after that week or that blip, it goes back to the same. Or maybe it's just a tad bit better. And because there's little changes, you're like, oh my gosh, like this is going to be the new future. And so you keep holding on, even if a relationship is way below your standards. Can I give an analogy in like the work sense that might explain
please,
this a bit more?
Please, yeah. So,
as an example, so say you're trying to get a contract for a job and your rate is $50 an hour. And this company is like, well, you know, all we can offer is $5 an hour. We've been hit hard by the pandemic. It's, you know, inflation, it's hard. And after some negotiation, they're like, fine, we'll give you $10 an hour. And so what you do if you're stuck in this intermittent like sparks of change is you're like, oh, well, it doubled from $5 to $10. That's amazing. And then you take the job without recognizing it's still below minimum wage. It's below minimum wage and below what your market value is. And so sometimes we do this in relationships. There's a little slight adjustment of change, but it's still way below your standards. So you right. want to look at that and see if you're in this kind of loop and you're stuck in it.
Yeah. So, okay. So by that standard, are you someone who would say never get back with an ex?
No, but I think that the only time you want to get back together with an ex is if there's been something that has actually changed. Is there a new data point? And that could be maybe while you were dating, they were in a messy divorce and they hadn't signed the divorce papers. And later on, they come back, the divorce is finalized. They're not, you know, in this kind of weird attachment with their ex. And maybe that is that new data point that's needed. But if you're going back just because you miss the person, or because you're lonely and those emotions of withdrawal cause you to go back together and nothing has changed, you're just going to keep repeating the same pattern over and over again. And this is what I see often, people in the same spiral for 5 years of their life.
Right.
And if you do get back together because, okay, maybe they've gone through therapy, maybe it's been a year and there's been a lot of changes, whatever it is, then you want to set out what are parameters of success that show that this relationship is growing and it's not going to keep repeating the same patterns as before. And you set a time limit. So you'd have a monthly check-in, and then I do a 3-month check-in after that and assess, has this relationship, are both of us meeting these new parameters? And if not, then you part ways, because otherwise it's very easy to just get stuck in the motions of it.
Oh my God. I mean, It breakups require us to hold such strong boundaries over the thing we're probably the most emotional and vulnerable about.
Yeah.
Like, which is why, like, even just the idea of setting a deadline that you're like holding your heart to.
Yeah.
That's like really fucking hard.
It's really, really hard. You know? Yeah.
Like, that's brutal, you know? And I mean, I could see why something like, you know, a boot camp, obviously, like a community is so valuable. But like, thank God I have friends. Otherwise, like, I mean, my sisters, like, I really don't know how I would get through these things where like you're just holding yourself to a deadline alone. And sometimes if the person you're breaking up with or I mean, if you're breaking up with them, they're actively fighting against the boundary you're holding and you quote unquote love them. Like, this is a nightmare.
I know. It's real rough. Being a human is hard.
It's really hard. So, I mean, the intermittent, like, what did you call it? Changes or work? Like what?
Yeah, intermittent reinforcement.
Okay, so I see that being, you know, I see that a lot where it's like, well, he's finally doing the laundry and he started cooking dinner, you know, whatever these things are. So, you know, when that's a thing and you're able to name it, how are you able to, I guess, unless it's a big thing like you just said, but when do you know, like, this is really over? Is there an indicator of, like, this is the end?
I think it's different for different people based on their values, right? I think that if you have children, for example, we have a very intertwined life, where you've been married for 20 years, it is going to be a different set of questions you ask yourself than if you're dating someone for 6 months. But I do think that you know it's over if there's been any sort of abuse. And I think you need to get very clear what your non-negotiables are. So whether you're single or whether you're broken up, I would write down, what are my non-negotiables? These are hard, red, like, stop signs. And it's there's no gray area. And it's going to be different for different people. That might be if they cheat. That might be if they do hard drugs, but you know, psychedelics are okay. It's going to be different. And you need to know what these are so that when you are in a relationship and the chemicals and the dopamine, it's causing you to have blinders on. If they hit that, it's a no. And what happens is when we're not clear and we get into a relationship and there's all these love drugs, you just rationalize like, oh, but it's okay that they, you know, want open and I don't, like, oh, you know, I'll just test it. Like, you just keep rationalizing because we are really good at rationalizing when we want something.
Right. I mean, and by the way, more often than not, I think we tell ourselves, of course I would end it if someone cheated. Of course I would end it if I were being abused. However, a lot of relationships, it's not going to, like, it doesn't always come to that. It's just like you're crying all the time. You know what I mean? Like, it's not, it's harder to leave someone that maybe you love and like that love's just not enough, even if they're not beating you up and drinking every night, which are, I mean, terrible, but easier to indicate than just like, this person is becoming not additive to my life.
Yeah. You know? I mean, I think that's a really hard situation, right? When you are dating someone, it's clearly it's toxic, it's narcissistic, whatever it is, it's so clear, you're like, okay, this is a no, even if it takes time for me to get out of it. But when they're a good person, right? When there is love there, when you are friends, it's not horrible, right? It's not great, but it's not horrible. That can be a hard thing to leave.
Do you have any stats on how long it takes to actually get over, like, go through a breakup? Sometimes I've heard people say like it's half the time of the relationship, or it takes double, you know.
Those aren't real. So there has been some research on timing, and this was one study done, so I don't want people to get stuck on, oh my god, I didn't hit that time. And it's 12 weeks where the emotional intensity starts to subside.
Okay. And tips on how to actually break it off, on how to break up, you know, like what that looks like.
Yeah. So if you're the one doing the breakup, know that you've had time to process because you already broke up in your head, you prepared yourself, and that other person who's receiving the news is going to be in a state of shock. Even if they knew it was coming, they're going to be in a state of shock. And so they can't process all of these things. The main message is, this relationship is over, and you want to do it as kind as you possibly can in person. You do not want to give a laundry list of all the flaws of this person. Do not do that. You just want to get that primary message out. Depending on the length and intensity of the relationship, it might require a follow-up where they can have some time to process, and you give them the grace of being able to come back and talk about it a bit more, ask questions, whatnot. And do not try to be their friend. It's the most selfish thing ever. And a lot of the times people who do the breaking up try to do this because they feel guilt. And they think that by being their friend and being there for them, it will help them. It doesn't. Number two, they want the girlfriend or boyfriend experience without the commitment or responsibility of relationship. And you have to let that person go. And that might mean, yes, they're going to have a period of time where they're going to process. It's going to be intense. It's going to be highs and lows. But being their friend, again, because of those neural pathways, you're not allowing them to prune away. So it's a disservice to both of you.
Do you have any insights on creating a friendship with your ex after the breakup, like in a, you know, in a new time period? I'm not talking about while you're going through the breakup, but like entering a different relationship with them, how to like install boundaries that feel safer.
Yeah, I'm actually really good friends with my ex, the one who inspired my breakup bootcamp, but it took time. And so it's a combination of time and allowing that charge, right? That dynamic that was once romantic and intimate, there needs to be a period of time for it to shift and evolve into something else. But you cannot expect to go from romantic and then, you know, without any time to just get into platonic. It's completely confusing to your body. So I think it's that. And I don't think every person deserves a space in your future. So, you know, like, do you even want to be their friend? Do they share the same values? And I do think that there are some people where it may not have worked out romantically, but there's still love. And that relationship works out as a friendship. But again, not everyone deserves a space in your life as a friend.
Thank you so much, Amy. I really appreciate you sharing all your insights, and I'm excited to read your book. You know, like I said at the start, I really think this is one of the hardest things people go through, and there's not enough resources and community around kind of navigating it. So, and thank you so much for coming on. Is there anything else you'd like to share with my listeners or where to find you?
Yeah, I mean, I'd love to just kind of even circle back on what you were saying about how your breakups were so hard and like the worst thing. It really seems like your relationships and those breakups, they were bridges. Each bridge led to another bridge. And the fascinating thing with people doing this healing and this work is the destination. You'd think that each bridge is going to lead you to the one, but each bridge leads you into a stronger, more resilient.
Leads you to another breakup. No, I'm joking.
That. And while you're doing that, it's also building your resilience, your wisdom, it's helping you understand what you don't want, so you know what you do want. And so I think all of those are so important in this path of creating love for ourselves. So yeah, I really look at it that way. And for those listening, whether you've had a string of hard relationships or you're in one right now, look at them as bridges, not the final destination.
I love that. I really, is a amazing reframe, and it's so true. So thank you so much, Amy. What's your Instagram handle?
It's at Miss Amy Chan, and my book's Breakup Bootcamp, The Science of Rewiring Your Heart, and my website's renewbreakupbootcamp.com.
Amazing. Thank you, Amy.
Thanks, Allie.